We are back. Lions Collective, we're live every single Wednesday. Well, now Thursday on some occasions, depending on schedule conflicts. The crew is here. We are ready to break down not only the game that transpired this Sunday, but preview Lions Chiefs Sunday night. We have injury updates. We have discussions to get into as it pertains to some players on the roster. A depleted secondary. It's rumored Will has tried out for DB. It's something that it was being reported.
Yeah.
A lot of things to talk about today, fellas.
Yeah, I might sign a futures contract, so I'm pretty fired up about that. And I might get a chance to talk to J-Raj and Colton as a player tomorrow. Epic. You guys got to come interview my ass.
Can't wait. I'll be the first one to scrum.
Yeah.
It's a mess. I mean, the cornerback position is obviously an important one, but in particular, this week, Pat Mahomes, you have to cover for 6.8 seconds per snap, and you know they're down both starters. Vontae Maddox pops up on the injury report today. Our colleague Dave Burkett just put out there that Brian Branch is going in for an MRI on his foot. Kirby Joseph's knee is dinged up. I don't know who's starting this week. It might be Will.
Yeah, I watched Branch today at practice just during warmups. He did look like he was moving pretty gingerly, and then we saw him limp rather cautiously through the locker room for about 30 seconds today. So I'm sure the Lions have their fingers crossed there. That is not a player that they can afford to lose right now, given the other deficiencies piling up in the secondary.
Yeah, you start thinking about like what it looks like, and you know, if
and then you Maddox sign me.
Yeah, like, look, Maddox has got a hamstring strain. We don't know the extent of that, but hamstrings generally not great for football players that are required to run a great deal. We've seen Sione Vaki down for a while. It's now a groin injury, but hamstring all through camp. You see DJ Reed, obviously, on the IR with a hamstring strain, and Zach Cunningham is on week three since also having a midweek hamstring strain. So, I don't know, like you see that pop up and we don't know the severity, but you know, first thought is not good, you know, maybe not available. And Maddox was probably in line for all the nickel reps this week. And so you got Amik Robertson on one side. Great. It's great. It's a great backup. Great plan B. You got Rocky Sin on the other side. I'm a big fan. I think solid, right? And then I have no idea. Like you're digging into the practice squad. If Vontae Max can go in, you're talking Trey Flowers, you're talking Nick Whiteside, you're talking Arthur Mollett. He just got here. I don't even know how to say his name. You know, I don't know if it's French. I haven't got that far yet. And so like you're set up for some of these guys to play against one of the greatest quarterbacks to ever play the game.
We got a comment from Joel. I wonder who the Lions would sign first, Bertie or C.J. Gardner-Johnson? Now on the Ravens practice squad. Where'd he go?
Yeah, Ravens. I definitely wouldn't ruffle as many feathers in the locker room. I can promise you that. Might not be the same playmaker, but I would keep a low profile with the boys.
Love.
Be a regular Eric Hallett over there.
Yeah, exactly right.
Yeah, you wouldn't be waving to the crowd, Will. I don't see as a wave to the crowd guy. So
I'd be saying, mask. Mom, look at me. I'm down here on the sidelines. That's who I'd be waving to.
Where's your ski mask, Will?
Yeah, I used to have one.
Yeah. Wait,
speaking of ski mask, this just triggered my memory. I was asking.
What a time.
I was asking. No, yeah. But not even about C.J. Gardner-Johnson. Yeah. I was asking Derek Barnes today what his celebration was supposed to be on his safety at the end of the game last week. And you noticed that he did a salute. And then what he was trying to do was draw a door in the air. And then he was going to pretend to open the doorknob. It was going to be locked. Then he was going to mime putting on a ski mask, break the door down like he was robbing the house. But it's just like, too many moving parts. He was like, I don't think it was received or conveyed well. So I was like, well, you just got to have a second safety. So he's going to work on that. He's still workshopping, but that was the vision. I think it was just too involved in the moment to have it all translate over
I'm
TV.
I'm sorry, Derek, if you're listening, that's terrible. Yeah. I don't know what you're doing, man. You got to get something better. Bertie, you were the one that was pitching the defensive guys some ideas, you know?
Yeah.
You got to help them out here. What are you doing?
Yeah, no, I know. I think that one's still being baked. So we'll see if they break that one out soon. For anyone who's not aware, I did go around the locker room maybe 2 weeks ago after Aaron Glenn's sideline dance went viral after that blocked punt. Or was it a blocked kick? Blocked kick, right? Back in week three when they almost beat the Bucs. And someone had set his sideline dance to "Do You Remember" by Earth, Wind, and Fire. And some of the guys had seen it. And so when I asked Amik if he had seen it, he was like, "Man, I was hitting that thing myself watching the game." And I was like, "Dude, you guys, after your next turnover, should gather in the end zone, form a conga line, and all through the AG." And he was like, "Well, that goes hard. That goes hard." Yeah. I brought it to Anzalone too, and he was like, "That's actually really good. We'll bring it to Kirby." Kirby is like the instructor, the director of the celebrations. So it sounds like maybe it's in Kirby's hands now, and we'll see if they break that out at some point down the line. But they were both pretty intrigued.
Kirby, who denied having the stumble bum celebration pre-planned.
Yeah. Like, straight no from way the hip.
Rep that 40 times in practice.
He's a true showman.
I don't know. We just need to find a happy median between whatever Barnes's 7-step celebration was and Tesla's kind of basic snow angel. Like,
he was down there. What else was he going to do?
I wonder if they're just running out of ideas because they have so many celebrations, you know? They've just been going through them. Touchdowns, defensive.
The well is not that deep, as Ben Johnson might say.
at least Isaac Tesla did the worm. I think that's got to be up there. The worm.
That was pretty good.
You know, that I haven't seen the – I'm surprised I don't see more worms. Like, he did it so well too. So he's at least got that in the bag, Isaac Tesla, for a rookie. So I'm proud of him there. I mean – you kind of mentioned the injuries, and the secondary is just going through it. I mean, I didn't even know the Brian Branch stuff is kind of new to me. I mean, I just recently saw it, so that's obviously great. Kirby Joseph can deal with the knee injury. I mean, it's not ideal. I know someone said earlier. I have to see who commented it. Oh, right here, Liam. He said that's 9 DBs between IR and the injury report. Why can't the Lions just get a normal distribution of injuries?
Yeah,
I mean, seems like they're all in position groups. Like last year, it was everywhere, but defensive line went down first. This year, it's DBs. It seems like that's how it's going. At least the offense is relatively healthy. I mean, Taylor Decker obviously has been dealing with the shoulder injury, and you know, you didn't have him last week. Giovanni Manu got the start. We got to see that. You know, it was a start.
He was out there.
He played.
Was out there. He was paired against one of the best pass rushers. Probably not an ideal start for him in the NFL, and Trey Hendrickson. I know John Morton said and kind of commented on it today, but now they got Dan Skipper to the active roster. He was on the practice squad, so you got a little more depth there. The big question I keep getting asked, and you guys are probably the perfect to answer this question, is we just saw this offseason Frank Ragnow hanging up due to just these injuries that keep piling up. And he was obviously a young player technically by NFL standards, and he retired. He, you know, injuries got to a point where he would rather be retired, not have to deal with injuries. He's made a lot of money in his career. Does it feel like we're getting to this point with Taylor Decker where he is in the Frank Ragnow tier of he's not practicing to kind of catch up on healing on injuries that are kind of stacking up? This one's the shoulder. Are we starting to kind of have to really think about life after Taylor Decker in the near future, or is this something that maybe fans are just more skeptical about, or do you think there's some truth to it?
You know, that was it was a story I kind of wanted to approach before the season started, and for one reason or another, you know, I couldn't pin down Decker for an interview that week. Probably had treatment, to be honest with you. We got him in the locker room last week before this game, you know, and I actually spent a little extra time with him one-on-one to kind of talk about the topic. And, you know, he said Ragnow's retirement really brought his football mortality into perspective and really had him kind of, you know, thinking more about what the end looks like. And there was a point during this current injury early on, week one-ish, where he said, "I'm done with this. Like, I don't want to do this anymore. I am just done with it altogether." And he's softened on that a bit, you know, as he's kind of rounded a little bit of a corner with this weekly rehab routine. You know, he's back in a better headspace. I think I would be pretty surprised if, you know, this was his final season. I didn't get that perception. The longer our conversation went on, he seems to think that he has maybe 5 years left physically. But it's more of the mental game now with particularly family decisions. Right. And so, you know, I think he's going on a year by year basis right now, but you know, he is still very, very determined to win a Super Bowl. Yeah. He really wants to win one here. And I think that is, as he would describe it, his selfish driving force right now to continue his career.
Yeah. I think a couple things from our conversation with Decker last week might have given you pause when pondering his future. One, when he referenced the chronic pain that he's going through right now, and alluded to the fact, you know, there's days when, you know, he struggles to even lift up his daughter at home without some kind of pain or discomfort. And that's brutal for anyone to go through, as he said, whether you're a football player or not. And then this is a little bit more in the joking sense, but when he spoke with Frank Ragnow over the phone a couple of weeks ago, and he said he actually originally called him on his way home from the facility one day because he just wanted to vent about everything that he was going through physically and all the prehab and rehab he was being forced to do just to be out there on Sundays to someone like Ragnow who could relate to it. And over the course of their conversation, you know, Ragnow referenced to him how much better he feels now that he's not trying to squat 500 pounds every week. And I think people heard Taylor recount that conversation and got the sense that Frank was like luring him into retirement. I didn't get that sense. It sounded more like two really close friends catching up and Decker needing an outlet to express some of these frustrations or this angst that he's dealing with. The other part of that stood out to me was when Decker talked about his performance so far and feeling like he's played pretty darn well, but also feeling like he could be playing better, maybe much better, if he felt closer to 100%. And when he said that, their decision to rest him on Sunday made so much sense, because really they don't need Taylor Decker playing at his best right now in October. They need him on the field and functioning at a high level come December and January. And you know, he was preparing for yet another in a murderer's row of pass rushers, having faced Garrett the week prior, and he would have been slated to face Hendrickson. And, you know, Taylor Decker is very self-aware. And I think he realized, along with the coaching staff and training staff, that for him to be where they need him to be later on this year, it just doesn't make sense to be playing right now. But it didn't bring into my head any suspicions that he might call it a career after this season.
Yeah, you know, I can see how, you know, Frank retiring would really kind of open your eyes to like how much longer you have left. To me, it's almost like, if any SNL fans out there, Kenan Thompson's been on that show for a minute. The cast keeps changing around him, but he's still there. In a year from now, that could be Decker with all these young guys in that offensive line room. And like, he's probably looking around saying, the guys I entered the league with, some of my closest friends that I played with for a long time, they're either not here anymore or they're stepping away from the game. I'm in constant pain. I have to get treatment all the time just to be out there and be maybe 70%. I don't know if you could put a number on it right now, but like, when you get to that point, that's a lot you have to deal with, especially when you have outside factors like children and long-term goals that you want to accomplish while you can still, you know, operate physically. So I think he's getting to a point where he's probably thinking about that pretty seriously. I think my eyes kind of opened up a little bit when I talked to him this summer in training camp, just about Manu and just how much he wants him to be his replacement. And he was pretty open about that. Like, I want to help him in any way I can, give him the best possible chance to be here and to be the guy long-term. And you don't really hear many guys that are still thinking about the game and playing at a high level, you know, kind of speak the way that he was speaking about Manu and the future. And to me, that kind of spoke volumes about maybe where he's feeling. And I'm sure, I'm sure if you get the proper training and the treatment and whatnot, he can keep this going for a few more years and maybe until the body starts to break down fully. But I think there is a battle and he's probably weighing the future and thinking about little things like that. Like, okay, I want to leave this franchise better than I found it. How can I help, you know, the replacements, the guys that might fill in for me? Cause he wants to be here long-term. He probably wants to be part of the franchise when he retires, to still be a face in Detroit, in the city. So the fact that he's kind of helping Manu along with that, I thought that was a really cool moment when I talked to him this summer. And the fact that we're hearing some of this stuff now doesn't quite surprise me, but I think right now, at least in the short term, it's about managing that shoulder injury and giving himself the best chance to compete at the end of the season when they're really going to need him and being careful with that.
Yeah, I'd like to add just a brief addendum to what I said. If they win the Super Bowl this season, I very much could see him stepping away, because that is the last thing that he really wants to achieve. And he's keenly aware of his legacy. And that means a lot to him, as it should for someone who has spent his entire career, 10 seasons now, with the same organization and who has survived multiple head coaches and regimes. And if they can find a way to the mountaintop, maybe it would make sense after this season for Decker to step away. But hey, that's a trade you make 10 times out of 9. I mean, right? Yep.
No doubt.
I don't even think that's speculative, Will. I mean, I asked him that directly in that little one-on-one, is like, would the equation change on how you think about your future if you had a Super Bowl ring? And he said, without a question. Yeah. I mean, it's just there's no doubt. I do think it's interesting, Colton was saying, just how the room has changed so much. It was another thing Decker said was like, he was just worried about leaving worried about leaving Panay alone.
Yeah.
He's like that. He's worried about his kids at home, but he's also worried about his kid at the facility, right? Like, weighing the two. But
big 330-pound child.
Right. And, you know, Manu obviously being the 350-pound younger child. But it is crazy, right? Like, that's a unit that was built slowly through the draft and has been kind of, you know, using Ben Johnson's words, the engine of the car, right? And we're kind of here at the cusp of it being fully turned over, 80% turned over relatively quickly, because, I mean, Graham doesn't have much longer here either. I wouldn't be surprised if he's gone at the end of the season, more of a cap or a financial decision. And like I said, I don't think Decker steps away this year. I think, you know, you look at the shoulder. We don't know exactly what it was, but he had shoulder surgery on this shoulder before the season. Whatever that problem was, it's fixed. This is a new problem.
That was a torn rotator cuff, by the way.
Yeah. So if this is something that can also be surgically addressed at the end of the year, maybe he bounces back. He has a bounce back just mentally and physically if this can get right.
Yeah, I think the big storyline, too, is you guys mentioned it, Giovanni Manu. He's been kind of mentoring him. Obviously, this is his second year, Giovanni. He was a developmental player. He got his first career start in the regular season. And I think it's a conversation that the Lions, I mean, Dan Campbell, he spoke about him today. Jared said he fought hard. That was his quote, which I love Jared, even though he almost got killed. He's the most professional dude at talking about Giovanni. But I will say, just based on what you guys have seen thus far, what is kind of your confidence that Giovanni can still be that replacement moving forward? Or is this something that maybe after the start on Sunday, not that, you know, you're writing him off by any means, but maybe the confidence that he can do that, there's still plenty more work. How should Lions fans kind of feel about Giovanni Manu in the future here? And you guys know more within the organization.
I think you can still be confident about his long-term future. I don't think the Lions are all that confident that if Decker can't play Sunday, that Manu is their guy again at left tackle. I don't think they can really afford to expose their most important player to those kind of blindside hits that he took last week from Trey Hendrickson. And guys, correct me if I'm wrong here, but when I was watching practice today with Dan Miller, it looked to us from our vantage point, which was from the far opposite corner of the field, that it was Skipper who was warming up with the first team offensive line at left tackle. And I just get the sense, whether it's Skipper or Cochran, that it won't be Manu on Sunday night in Kansas City. And look, he didn't play well, and there's really no way to sugarcoat that. That was a pretty sobering performance on Sunday for a player that obviously this organization has high hopes for over the long term. And Manu knew it himself. Like, he was really hard on himself after the game. Justin, you and I were talking to him. I think Colton, you were in that scrum too. And like, you could really feel and hear the self-disappointment that he was going through, to the point that like Decker came over afterwards and propped him up and told him, you know, my rookie season looked like this at some times, maybe not quite like that, but look similar to that at some times. And Jared came over and said, dude, it's okay. Like everyone has to go through games like this to get to where we want to go. And Manu, it just holds himself to the standard that has been set in the offensive line room, which is exceptionally high. And it's why he was so disappointed in the way he played last Sunday. And, you know, just if we break down some of the mistakes he makes or that he made, I think it is illustrative of the growth that he needs to make now moving forward. You know, he talks about the two sacks, and the first one was when Hendrickson came around the left edge and strip sacked Jared Goff on a play that, by the way, should have been ruled a pass. I thought Goff got that ball out of his hands. But regardless, Manu was beat badly, and he missed a kill before that play at the line of scrimmage. And when I was talking with him about it today, you know, he was explaining he was the only one that missed that kill. And it was supposed to be a run play, and it got killed at the line to a pass play. So he was still in a 3-point stance as if he was going to go run block. And Hendrickson just completely caught him off guard, ripped around that edge and sacked off. And look, that's probably a natural mistake for a rookie to make playing in what was a pseudo loud environment, but on the road against a really good defensive line. And then the second one was more glaring to me when Joseph Asai just completely blew past him and almost ended the Lions season if he had gotten a better lick on Jared Goff. I mean, he laid Goff out, and he had like a 12-yard uninhibited run at him. And I just think the Lions see that on film, cringe, and say to themselves, we can't allow this to happen again against maybe a pass rusher like George Karlaftis. But on that play, Manu was trying to sell a run block and just oversold it, and in the process exposed himself, and he got off balance. He lunged a little bit too hard, a little bit too aggressively on that run block that, you know, that he was trying to sell. And Asai again just took complete advantage. So when Manu was, you know, trying to home in on things to work on this week, it was his set angles and then just homing in on his responsibilities on each play. But you could tell just on those two plays alone that both mentally and physically, he's still got a ways to go.
I think mentally is the key word here. You know, it was very apparent watching the film how much he was thinking throughout this game. And when you think in the NFL and you're not reacting, you know, we talk about game of inches, but if you think of it more as game of fractions of seconds, you know, if you're a quarter of a second slower than your opponent, when you are all elite athletes, you're going to get destroyed. And so there were just these moments of hesitation that you don't see from Detroit's other offensive linemen. And you talk about the not hearing the kill. Like, what was the big issue in week one? It was this, these inabilities of being on the same page, the communication errors that you see even with veterans, kind of when you're first learning to ride a bike again. And a reader from my site had a really great comparison. They're like, look, he came from the Canadian college football ranks. Like, it's tough for us to even come up with an equivalent now, but now a year and a half in, like, he's essentially like a second or third round prospect at a big school, but he's still a rookie and he's still inexperienced and all these things are new to him. And so I just can't glean a whole lot from this performance on a game where I never thought he would see the field this early. The mistakes were what you'd expect, the flashes of brilliance, and there were a couple were what you'd expect with his athletic gifts. But what I do know is, no matter your position, the greatest experience at the professional level is experience. And I'm not talking about coming in at the end of the game and playing some garbage time rep. I'm talking about playing a full damn game against Trey Hendrickson. Every single one of those reps, those physical and mental reps, the changing boxes that were throwing him off and causing some of those hesitations, that bankable information is going to make him a better player. So the next time we see him, and you're damn right, it's probably not going to be this week, but the next time we do see him, whether it's later this year or 2026, he should be a vastly improved player strictly from this one game.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's a guy who so badly wants to be great, so badly wants to be the future left tackle or maybe Finney over right tackle, but he so badly wants to be part of this offensive line. He loves playing for Hank Fraley, for Dan Campbell. He's so appreciative of this Lions franchise for going to get him in that draft, which is what they did. You know, Brad said he was one of the players that he woke up on day three and said he couldn't leave that draft without. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, I think that speaks volumes to how they feel about him, or at least felt about him. And, you know, I think going into year two for where he came from, going against Trey Hendrickson, his first start, like, yeah, I'm probably grading him on a curve. Maybe I'm being a little too nice to him, but like, I basically saw what I expected. When you hear Giovanni Manu is going to start that game against Trey Hendrickson, like kind of last minute with Taylor doubtful on Sunday, I'm like, yeah, this is probably what we're going to see. It's going to be a little rough sometimes. I thought he did some nice things in the run game. I think right now he's further along in the run game than he is in pass protection for sure. He has trouble handling speed off the edge. I think in a game like that, I think Justin mentioned it, like you go back to Green Bay in week one, there are multiple guys at once having communication issues, and then they sorted those out, and then you throw him out there and he's isolated on an island sometimes and he's missing calls. That's got to be, you know, pretty tough to deal with by yourself. You feel like you're letting the team down as a young player who feels as deeply as he feels. So that's a really tough spot to be in. You know, there's a standard in that room and it's kind of next man up. That's how this team has always operated under Dan Campbell. But for him making his first career start, like you kind of knew what you're going to expect, you know, with that guy going in there at that point. And Dan Campbell's comments after the game, Dan's sort of incapable of lying, as we know.
Yeah.
So when asked about like, hey, what are you going to do next week? Is Decker coming back? Would you look at other options? He was kind of left it open-ended and was like, eh, yeah, I'm going to see. Maybe Skip can get in there. Maybe Cochran, you know.
Yeah.
Kind of left it open-ended, and that told me, all right, well, maybe they're not going to run him back out there and risk, you know, injuring Jared Goff and the offense having to adjust and account for him being out there, not being able to run everything that you normally run just because he needs extra help and extra attention. So he's in a tough spot, man. Like if you're asking me the long-term, you know, view of him, I don't know if you have your answer off of one game, and it's a tough place. So I would like to see more of him to see if he can get his feet wet and find a rhythm here. If you do want to keep Taylor out a little bit longer to heal. But I just don't know if he's at that point where they can give him that extended look. And if that's the case, and you don't have that answer by the end of the year, and Taylor's thinking about retirement and you're in a similar spot as Frank, you know, at what point do you look in the draft and say, hey, maybe we just add another body here, a guy that can compete, and say, hey, let's let the chips fall where they are. So I just don't think you're gonna have an answer anytime soon unless they're giving him another shot. It doesn't sound like that's gonna be the case, but we don't exactly know yet. But I'm not ready to give up on him because something that Brad Holmes says is it takes 3 years to find out what you have in a player. You know, he's five games in a year too. So he's not quite there yet, and that's perfectly fine in my opinion.
And it wasn't all bad, to be clear. Like he did have some impressive plays in the run game, I thought. And when I asked him today if there was anything he liked, because he was just so downcast when we talked to him on Sunday that he was in no mood to highlight any positives. You know, he did allow that he was proud of the fact that, you know, he timed up the snap count, didn't have any false starts, which is something that you would think would be a hurdle or a potential issue for a player in his shoes. And he also said that, you know, on certain pass plays, in particular, the quick pass plays, he set pretty well there. That's something that Hank Fraley told him personally, just as they reviewed the tape. So I don't want to paint the picture of like an utter disaster, but when he did slip up, the mistakes were glaring because of the player that was lined up across from him and because of his responsibility to protect the player who will decide the Lions' fate this season. And so there is, I think, a change that needs to be made Sunday, but by no means should we be counting out Gio Manu based off of, 45 extremely challenging reps.
Yeah. I don't know how much better Dan Skipper or Devin Cochran would have done in that same matchup, honestly. Like, and look, I like Dan Skipper. I think he fills the role very nicely as OT3, but we saw what it was like when he had to block Aiden Hutchinson through camp. It was not pretty. It just wasn't. And Trey Hendrickson might be a half tick below. And I say that as the guy that was a first team All-Pro and led the league in sacks. But I mean, just in terms of versatility of moveset. Like, he might be a half tick below Aiden Hutchinson at this point in their careers. And, you know, it probably wouldn't have gone well. And, you know, Skipper's been battling knee tendonitis for all offseason. He told me today that they did post camp strength testing and his injured knee was less than half strength. Like, they do, like, you know, PSI or whatever test for these things, and one was 200 and one was 70. Like, not great, but he's healthy now. He played it very coy when I asked if he just bumps right back into the swing tackle role. He's like, you know, whatever, playing the good soldier. But, you know, you saw him out there with first team, Will. I'm gonna take your word for it.
Yeah, you guys can all quote that. Blast it out on the internet. If Detroit Times is watching, they'll probably blast it out there.
It's already out there. It's been already done.
Yeah. Done.
Yeah, I've told him he's a sicko. That guy's a sicko. I've told him.
Yeah, I don't know how he does it. It's impressive. I'm not too impressed.
He grinds.
I don't. Yeah,
he doesn't miss a thing.
No, he does not. No, he does not. But we're gonna get to golf. Before we do that, I have to tell you about our friends over at Sleeper. So allow me to do that. Let me get the fellas in here so we can fix this camera angle. I mean, I don't know what's going on with this, but you know what? You hear from it. Just watch the dang commercial.
Sleeper is the number one fantasy sports app. It pays to know sports. Pick more or less on top players. Your first pick is on us, so start winning now. Play in Texas, Georgia, Minnesota, and 27 more states. Pick anytime across all sports, pregame or live. Over 10 million players are already on Sleeper. Make your picks count. Score up to 1,000 times your cash. Join today. Get up to $100 credit using code HMA. Call your shot on Sleeper. Download now.
All right, there you go. Okay,
hey.
We fixed it. Let me tell you about our friends over at Sleeper. It's a fantasy sports plus real money gaming app focused solely on bringing people together through sports and gaming. It's become one of the fastest organically growing fantasy platforms in the world. It's got millions of active users while still earning some of the highest levels of engagement per user in the industry. They also have Sleeper Picks, which is their real money product that connects friends over picks. You choose 2 to 8 of your favorite players from pregame, live, or across different sports, pick more or less than the predicted stats. And on Sleeper, you can get up to 1,000x payouts. Share with your friends, get rewarded together. Use the code HMA, get a $100 deposit, match up to $100. All right, let me fix this real quick. All right, we're back. There you go. Jared Goff, you mentioned him. He's obviously, he's tough as they come. I mean, the hits he was taking on Sunday, and he got sacked 3 times, which felt like just an absurd amount considering they've gave up 0 sacks the 3 prior games, which, you know what, he's still playing extremely well. And this is a thing you kind of see it too. The last 2 games they played, you play the Browns and the Bengals, who are struggling at the quarterback position. And you look at the complete opposite scenario, it makes you appreciate how durable Jared Goff is and how great of a player he actually is. He's now played more games as a Detroit Lion than he has a Ram, and he is first in the NFL in passing touchdowns right now, 7th in QBR. I think he's top 5 in MVP odds. He's having an incredible start to the season. And you know what? For a player that has had, what, like 7 offensive coordinators, I believe, in his career, I think that anyone that decides to bring up the Jared needs a good OC or offensive mind debate should be shot out of a cannon into the sun. That's what I believe, because that argument does not hold up in court anymore. It's over. It's done. So credit to Jared Goff. And honestly, it's perfect because you go into the weekend now facing Mahomes, and we know the last two times that Jared Goff has faced Mahomes, he's played extremely well against the best quarterback in the NFL, I would say. So what have you guys kind of made of his level of play now post-OC change? We're 5 games into this John Morton experiment, and he's excelling with a new offensive line, no Frank Ragnow, new OC. Nothing changes, it seems, with this guy. He just keeps playing better and better.
Have we considered that maybe we've had the wrong narrative here all along with the OCs, and that Jared Goff makes the OCs better?
Yeah, Ben Johnson, Jared Goff merchant.
Yeah. So what? Hey. At this point, there you go.
All 3 NFC North coaches coached Jared Goff, right? All the other 3?
Yep.
O'Connell,
O'Connell and Ben.
I don't know. I guess I would have to look up how many of his quarterbacks / OCs have ended up in greater roles. But like,
J-Raj, I will buy you 12 beers from Dog and Pony Show Brewing if at Jared Goff's next media scrum next week, you ask him, Jared, do you think that the other coaches in the NFC North are actually Jared Goff merchants?
I feel like I need to pull this away and get beers away from Dog and Pony because Will's just going to get those for free. But if you don't think I won't do that, you are incorrect.
I think you would actually really appreciate it.
Yeah. Petty Goff would love that.
Oh, it's about no time doubt.
Some sort of
yeah,
that
yeah, yeah.
It just depends on the mood that guy's in.
Yeah.
But yes, on the right day, I agree. I think you'd love it. But like we talk about this last year, not us, but the royal us. You know, this was a guy a year ago that was on the same kind of early MVP track. And then you start looking at it. What does it take in present day NFL to win an MVP as a pocket passer? Because we already know the award's going to a quarterback. That's unfortunately a given. But in the era of Pat Mahomes, Josh Allen, Lamar Jackson, like what does a pocket passer have to do? One, you have to win all the games. I mean, 15 was a good start last year, you know, so somewhere in that ballpark, your conference is a really, really strong start, at least your division one. You have to throw at least 40 touchdowns. Yeah. And you do. And Goff is on that pace right now. I think 12 through 5 puts him on pace for 41, I'm pretty sure. And then you have to throw fewer than, I say 10 interceptions, but it's probably closer 10. To like, probably closer to fewer than 7 if we're being honest. And you know, I point to the Aaron Rodgers.
Aaron Rodgers, yep.
Back to back. And look, Aaron Rodgers had some mobility early in his career, but when he was winning those MVP, those last two back to back MVP awards, like he wasn't 28-year-old Aaron Rodgers. He was starting to slow down, probably had fewer than 300 rushing yards and probably significantly fewer, but look at those touchdown to interception ratios. Yeah, I mean, they're absurd. I think
right now
45 to 4 or something. What are they, Will?
48 touchdowns to 5 interceptions the first year, 37 touchdowns to 4 interceptions the next year. Both years he led the league in both touchdown rate and interception rate.
Yeah. So if Goff continues on his current pace, I think it puts him at 41-7. And I wouldn't even call that a lock, but if he can stay on that pace, he is very, very much in the conversation coming into the season, particularly if the Lions, one, win the division, two, win the conference.
Yeah, I think the thing that Jared needs to avoid is sort of the meltdown game, because I feel like he has a couple of these a season, and we saw it last year in Houston. I think the week before that game, I wrote a story about why Jared Goff
won
the MVP conversation. And usually when that happens, maybe I'm the guilty. Jinx, maybe whenever someone else does it, like it's like right when you start saying, "All right, Jared, this is your moment." He does have sort of a clunker game, and you know everyone
on Natty TV too, with
and
a
it
whole
happens
league
to be
watching.
Nationally televised football, and it's like, man, if you just had 2 interceptions instead of 5, you're probably still in this race right now. Mm-hmm. So, you know, obviously last year he had the game in the playoffs. And like, I think narratives can build from those nationally televised games where you have those meltdowns, and he is a little bit prone to that as good as he is otherwise. And so if he can avoid a game like that, and obviously I'm not asking him to play perfect all year, but just those big national stage games, maybe not Sunday night, maybe he can avoid that against Pat Mahomes. That'll probably help the narrative a little bit coming up here. But other than that, like you look at what he's done and he's orchestrating the best offense in the NFL at such a high level. And he's done it with different coordinators, with the same cast, but a different offensive line, different center. He's taking on more responsibilities and getting them into the right plays and out of bad ones. And you hear so much about that, but I really do think that's a superpower. And that's something that I don't think is really talked about nationally enough. We know about it, but I don't know if that's really known on a wide scale outside of Detroit. And, you know, when you're talking about an award like MVP, where Lamar Jackson's winning it and, you know, Josh Allen's winning it and Pat Mahomes is winning it, like you need to kind of make up for it in other ways. And I'm not sure he has like the national driving force narrative behind him. So I think Justin's right. It's really going to have to be a statistical win. Like you have to put up numbers like prime Aaron Rodgers and Peyton Manning when he was winning it, even in Denver. That was like one of the best seasons we've ever seen. Mm-hmm. That's what it took for him to win the MVP like late in his career when he got to that point. But, you know, Jared has all the weapons around him. know, they're going to be unselfish. They run the ball, obviously. That's going to be the heart of what they do. But I really do think if he can avoid the true meltdown on a national stage, that will help a lot. I really do think, I don't know if that's crazy to say, but I really do think that would help him with that narrative, which you need to win an award like MVP.
You know what help him even more, Colton, is if he goes and he has the, whatever year it was, 2020 Chiefs Rams game where he just goes bananas on national television. Go the other way. He might win the MVP in week six.
Yeah. It almost feels like to make a compelling MVP case to the national body, he would even have to outplay the seasons that Aaron Rodgers and Peyton put up in the years that they won it, because Rodgers and Peyton were already accepted as one of the 3, 4, 5 best quarterbacks in the NFL. So once they were in that conversation, they had some more gravity with those who were voting on it. Jared is not yet accepted nationally as one of the 5 best quarterbacks, maybe now one of the 10 best. But I think to really stake his claim to that award, he would have to overcome some of these perceptions or preconceived notions about him that still exist, even though most of them are wrong. And I think part of the reason Dan Campbell has gone out of his way after almost every game this year to highlight all of the things that Jared is doing before the snap is to kind of convey this to everyone. Like, this is what our quarterback is doing. It's not just the numbers. He is responsible as much as anyone for the functioning of this offense, which now leads the league in points per game for the second straight year. Like, Dan will always go to bat for his guys. And Dan's also pretty sharp in the way he handles the media and usually has a reason for the messages that he's trying to disseminate. And it does seem to me like one of them this year is to emphasize how valuable Jared is to everything the Lions do on offense. I'm blown away that he has somehow gotten even better this year when teams blitz him. And it's been a strength of his now for a number of years, really his entire Lions tenure, and even going back to some of his time with the Rams. But if you are bringing the blitz against Goff, you are asking to get diced up. He has the highest pass rating in the NFL when blitzed this season, 143.7. He's basically a perfect quarterback when you send extra rushers in his direction. And it's interesting that now for the first year, I think we're seeing coordinators adjust. He used to get blitzed a lot, and he isn't being blitzed quite as frequently this year. And in this matchup with Spagnuolo on Sunday night, who is known for his aggressive blitzing defenses, I think the Chiefs know if they're going to bring pressure, to quote Dan Campbell, if they're going to bring blitzes, they better disguise them well enough to win a Grammy.
He meant an Emmy because
Jared is so adept at sniffing out blitzes and sifting through all of the noise on defense. We see it every darn time they play Flores and the Vikings. Flores, much like Spags, is known for those exotic, creative blitz packages. And Jared has a way to sort through them, diagnose them, and get into the right plays. And that's a product of being such a high IQ quarterback. And there is now a clear inverse pattern between Goff passer rating when blitzed and how frequently he's being blitzed. I do think coordinators are adjusting, but it's just another example of the way that he is processing defenses and then executing the offense at an elite, elite level.
I think the Grammy comment was actually a subtle shot at Taylor Swift. I'm just being honest.
Oh, I like it.
Yeah. I think
Chiefs subtle, Campbell's subtle, beefing with Taylor Swift.
Subtle dig. When you talk about the changing at the line of scrimmage, I think what stands out to me is the reverence Detroit's defensive players have for Jared Goff. And I was talking to Jack Campbell this week for a story I'm working on about the defense and some of, I guess, what they're doing on that front. And he said Goff's ability to check in the perfect play, if you don't have the ability to counter that at some level, you're dead in the water. And he said his ability to read and decipher what we can do, he said there's just not a young quarterback in the league that can do that. You've got Kevin O'Connell talking to his quarterbacks the last possible second, giving them all that information, and Jared's here at this 500 level. He's a doctorate in deciphering pre-snap what to do. And then also as you're demonstrating with the blitzing here, post-snap, he knows where to go. He has the answer key. He's seen so many reps. We talk about Gio seeing nothing, right? Manu's seen nothing. And so everything is new to him. How many reps does Jared Goff have under his belt now? It's thousands upon thousands upon thousands of bank reps with a smart individual that's able to store that information, to process it, to apply it. And he just has an answer for almost anything you could possibly throw at him in this league. And I think it's always really exciting to see that final stage of maturation for great processing quarterbacks. You talk about the Peyton Mannings and the Tom Brady's. I mean, I understand what I'm doing when I'm putting Goff in that conversation. He's not those guys.
Headline.
Or maybe never will be, but like, that is where he's at as a processor, right? Like, he is at that big mega brain level of seeing how things develop and executing at the highest level. You don't complete 75% of your passes if you're not executing at the highest level imaginable.
And the best answer he has against the blitz, and this is not to undermine him at all, is Amon-Ra St. Brown, because there might not be a more reliable receiver when it comes to getting open quickly, being where his quarterback needs him to be, and then making contested catches than St. Brown. And when I was talking with Saint today, and we were, you know, kind of batting around this this concept of Goff just being the blitz beater, I was asking him, like, when defenses are showing blitz, are you hoping that they send it, just knowing how well Jared can handle it and knowing the opportunities that obviously it creates in the back end of the defense? And he was like, well, yeah, I mean, easy for me to say. I'm not one of the running backs for tight ends or offensive linemen or quarterbacks that has to account for all those extra rushers in our face. But absolutely, because I know that Jared can handle it, and I know that I'm going to have opportunities to win in favorable matchups. And I know that Jared's going to be able to get me the ball. So that when it comes to blitz beaters, it's, you know, it's not only Jared, but it's the connection that he has formed with St. Brown, and give Jared credit for that. I mean, there aren't two players who work more tirelessly at their own dynamic, their own link, than Jared and Amon-Ra.
Now, we're going to kind of pair both, because we have our Doug and Pony picks, and I want to discuss the next five-game stretch ahead. So to kind of combine here. Oh, here we go. Okay. less of me, more of the boys here. Okay, so let me ask you guys this. So this matchup this weekend, primetime game, Sunday Night Football, you're facing the Chiefs coming off a loss. You look forward. They have the bye week in 2 weeks. They have the Tampa Bay Buccaneers for a Monday night game. Then you have the Vikings. And then the Commanders and Eagles. So this is the next five games for the Detroit Lions. It's a tough stretch. It's why Dan's been very smart with these injuries, trying to not rush guys back. What do you think of kind of this matchup this weekend? Just the next five games for this Detroit Lions team. Because they've had the Browns, they've had the Bengals, they've had the Bears. They beat the Ravens, and they faced the Packers. But these next five games are going to be a true test. You talk about Jared Goff challenging for the MVP award. This is going to be some of those games. You have two nationally televised games, or actually three of them, in the next five.
I think I would really like to know.
not the next six.
Shout out, dark season.
I really would like to know who's starting in the secondary for a lot of this, but
yeah.
I think we can comfortably say that the Detroit Lions can beat anybody in the NFL, right? Like, they can beat any team. They can match up stylistically with any team. They have the talent to go toe-to-toe with any team. It's strictly the matter of seeing it back-to-back-to-back-to-back-to-back. Like, there's not an undefeated team in the NFL right now, guys. There's not. Like, we're five games in the season, and everybody has already lost a game, and some teams have got tripped up against bad opponents. Green Bay lost to Cleveland.
I thought they weren't going to lose the game all year.
Well, I'm sure most people in Green Bay believe that. Buffalo lost to New England, right? And so there's this principle of any given Sunday that, you know, applies every year. And so the odds of the Lions coming out of this stretch 5-0 are pretty low. Mm-hmm. I think you feel amazing if you come out of it at 4-1, and you feel okay knowing what's behind it if you come out of it 3-2.
Yeah, I think I look at the schedule. I'm like, 3-2 sounds pretty good. Honestly, I've been thinking about this a lot, and I thought about this when the schedule came out in May. You know, think, I guess go back 2 years ago to that Chiefs-Lions opener and how that was such like a display for this team and what they would eventually become under Dan Campbell since that 2023 season. You can go back to late 2022, yeah. But they hadn't done it yet. They hadn't made the playoffs as a group yet. That was their first game of the season on banner night in Kansas City. A lot of people are like, well, that's going to be a loss, but hey, maybe we can win week two. You know, that was sort of the mindset back then. Now I have friends. I went to Mizzou. I got friends in Kansas City that I'm going to see this weekend. They're scared of playing the Lions. They're like, man, I wish we won that Jags game because now we're going to lose the Lions. Like, we're going to be on a skid again. Like, that's kind of how they're feeling. The Lions are that team for other teams now. And like, that's just the reality. I was talking to Alex Anzalone about this in the locker room. Like, hey, do you remember that game? What do you remember about the opportunity? And he was like, yeah, you know, it was an opportunity, but like, we're a good team and we like our chances. And like, that's sort of the mindset that they're taking with them now, even into a stretch that we can call brutal. But for those other teams that they're facing, it's like, oh man, Detroit's coming. Or hey, we got Detroit on schedule coming up next. And we got to be on our P's and Q's, guys. Like, they're going to, they handle business, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I think when you look at the schedule, you know, obviously you're not going to win every game, and the Lions already lost one, and that was in, you know, a pretty rough beatdown in week one, but they bounced back from that. They seem to be in a groove. So yeah, I think if you go 3-2, you're feeling pretty good about where you are. That still probably puts you high up in the NFC. If you go 4-1, then you're riding high. And I think that really proves that you are the team that you thought you were. So that's kind of how I look at the stretch. I think they can win, come out of this 5-game stretch with a winning record. That's what I would expect. I actually saw the Commanders a couple weeks ago, and I know Jaden Daniels wasn't playing, but I was not super impressed with some of the pieces against the Raiders team. That was really bad. So I think that one's winnable. I looked at that Vikings game. Obviously, the Lions went undefeated in the NFC North last year. So they're not afraid of anyone in this division. The Bucs are playing pretty good offense right now. That one probably scares me more than I thought going into the season, just because you don't have your corners right now. So, yeah, there's some things that you got to make sure. Okay, let's look at the full picture here. But I like their chances against anyone on their schedule. It's just a matter of the matchup and getting it done that specific week.
Yeah, in some ways that Buccaneers game on Monday night feels like maybe the most daunting one in this stretch. Obviously going to Philly is a whole different animal, but they've looked vulnerable themselves this season, especially more recently. That the Bucs have given this team trouble. I mean, obviously last year they clipped them in week two when the Lions went like 1-6 in the red zone that day, and they pushed them to the very limit in the playoffs the year prior. It took that Derek Barnes interception late in the fourth quarter to seal that game. And Baker, much like Jared Goff, this former first overall pick, is having a major career renaissance with a team that he has made himself home at. And he's got all kinds of receivers. And that team, much like Baker, isn't scared of anything. They are probably looking forward to coming into Ford Field in a couple of weeks and proving that they can match up again and potentially beat the team that I think most of us consider one of the two best, if not the best, in the NFC. I'm really intrigued to see how that one goes. But I go back to the beginning of the season, and I think there were a lot of Lions fans, and this is certainly true after week one, who assessed the first 10 games and said, I will take 5-5. I will absolutely take 5-5, knowing what awaits them down the stretch. And so, yeah, if you enter this stretch now at 4-1 and you go 3-2 and you exit it 7-3, like you're in darn good shape, because those final six games are all eminently winnable. So the Lions have put themselves now in a really good position, just how well they've played since that first Packers loss.
I will say, I'm not sure how many Lions fans would actually be happy with 5-5 just based on how they reacted to week one, but that's just
yeah, nice. No, I'm saying if you had offered them 5-5 after the Packers game, okay, I think a fair number would have signed up. Having seen all the holes get exposed in Green Bay. Our offensive line sucks. Oh my God, our pass rush sucks. Oh my God, the coordinator sucks. You can get us to 5-5 through 10 games. We can maybe catch fire down the stretch, but obviously that outlook has changed dramatically, and it should have changed based on how all of those questions have obviously been answered and tempered.
No doubt.
Yeah, speaking like a true 97.1 employee, that 5-5 would have been.
I think they would have burned the city down 5-5. So I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, to Colton's point, it would have been, you know, trade every single player on the roster and go get Myles Garrett. And then we're good.
Yeah, except he's gonna have to play corner.
Yeah.
Myles, you got any experience playing DB?
Yeah. I mean, I think this Chiefs game will be very interesting because, and I know I had people commenting on over at our channel, just like Jeff, you know, they lost, the Chiefs lost. So now all of a sudden this game becomes more difficult, which I understand that from the perspective of the Chiefs, maybe they get a little more desperate, but it's not like the Chiefs lost and said, okay, now I'm going to try. I just think this game was going to be hard no matter what. This, whatever happened on Monday night, it was always going to be a difficult game. I mean, you're an Arrowhead, you're facing Mahomes. What are you guys for? Of course, Dog and Pony Show Brewery.
Oh yeah.
In our Dog and Pony Show picks. What's your guys' final score for the Sunday night game? What do you guys
got? Quickly, before we dive into these picks, I do want to shout out anyone who's watching us down at Dog and Pony Show tonight. Kyle did tell us he'd have us on the big screen, or at least on one of the screens. I'm thinking maybe we're on the big screen. So shout out to everyone there. And he wanted to have me remind everyone that not only will they be open on Sunday night for the game, which is a special occasion. They're usually closed Monday. So they'll be open on Sunday night for the game. Not only that, they'll have Theo Gridiron on site singing forward down the field anytime the Lions score a touchdown. So if I could be there, I would be there. That feels like the place to be on Sunday night. And obviously always mention Dog and Pony Show Brewing at the brewery. They'll knock a dollar off your beer. This is a great matchup on Sunday night. It really is. And I love the fact that the Lions are getting what feels like a bit of a desperate Chiefs team. And, you know, they're getting in some ways a revitalized or recreated, reimagined Mahomes in two ways. One, he's running more than ever. He's actually the Chiefs leading rusher this season, which is not by design. It's probably more out of so far, but he's I think he has the second most scramble yards in the NFL to only Josh Allen. He's taken off like 5.5 times per game, which is the most of his career. But at the same time, like he's pushing the ball downfield more aggressively and more frequently than he has in the recent past. And I think we've always associated Mahomes with those beautiful long touchdown passes to the, you know, Tyreek Hills of the world. But if you go back and look at the numbers over the past couple seasons, like he's actually been toward the bottom of the league when it comes to, you know, passes of 20 plus air yards. He's back at the top of the league this season. I think he's tied for second so far in that category. And maybe only Baker has more. And that also is a reflection of Xavier Worthy getting back in this offense. He missed the first couple games. They've had him back out through the past two. He's obviously one of their most explosive weapons. You heard Shep talking about this offense today, and you know, they had him, they had all their 40 times up on the board, and he was like, damn, 4-2, 4-2-5, 4-3, 4-3-5. Like,
track speed out there.
Oh man, they got speed. They got speed for days, speed to burn. So I think that makes for an interesting and potentially dangerous matchup against obviously a depleted secondary. And then on the other side of the ball, this has been a defense that has struggled to generate pressure with four. And so they've been forced into blitzing a lot. And again, if that's the case on Sunday night, this is a quarterback and an offense that can take advantage of that. But a really fascinating chess match, I think, is on tap between Spagnuolo and Goff and even Graham Glasgow in there too, as they try and decipher the different blitzes. My pick is Chiefs 27, Lions 24. I think the injuries in the back end catch up to the Lions this week against a pretty desperate, hungry Chiefs team and against a quarterback that's pushing the ball downfield. I just think KC gets one back on the Lions from 2023.
Colton, go ahead.
I like that. Here's what I like about the Lions matchup. I think this Chiefs defense, they've kind of struggled a little bit against the run. 4.8 yards per carry allowed. I believe that's, I think, the seventh, that ranks seventh highest in the league. Their defensive rushing success rate is among the bottom five or 10. So I think this could be a Gibbs and Demo game if you want to keep the ball on the ground and keep Pat Mahomes off the field. Maybe a little bit like we saw against Lamar Jackson in Baltimore, but I don't know if you're going to have the same success against a defense like that. But I do like their matchups. You know, I think Jared can have success against the blitz. He has the highest EPA per dropback against the blitz this year. And if they're going to do that to generate pressure, I like his chances. That said, yeah, I mean, I think the Chiefs are going to come out pretty pissed here. They lost a game that they probably thought they should have won. And
yeah,
national stage probably don't want to get embarrassed on their own turf by a Lions team that tends to dance on people's graves. So I do think they'll be a little motivated out there, but I still like the Lions in this one. Call me a homer, but I think I'm going to go 28-24 Lions.
Is this the first time we've had differing opinions and a prediction all year. I feel like we've been pretty consistent.
Even in lockstep.
Yeah, this is my first time picking the opposition. I'm not a hater.
I think I picked Baltimore.
I think we all picked the Ravens, right?
Yeah.
Oh, did we all pick the Ravens? Yeah, yeah I guess man, I'm a hater.
I don't know what you guys are talking about. Confirmed hater. Right? I mean, I don't know what you guys are talking about.
I have a really important question. And this is some new information for Will. Worthy missed practice today. Might be out. So if Rice and Worthy are out and Reed and Arnold are out, who gets the asterisk from Mike Tirico? this is important. I need to know. That poor guy, he's taken so much.
Yeah, he could be the guest. Maybe he could be a guest on a pregame show.
I'm pretty sure we just ruined that possibility with that comment.
Love you, Mike.
Look, I think the Chiefs offense, because of Worthy's injury, because let's face it, Travis Kelce's 36 years old. He is not the same player. He is in decline. He's still good, but like he's not aging like LeBron is aging. And Rice being out for one more game with his 6-game suspension has made their offense clunky. They can't run the ball. Mahomes is scrambling for his life. And I have more confidence than ever in the Lions handling mobility at the quarterback position, given the way they game plan for Lamar Jackson, which I think is still the cream of crop run threats. And I know Mahomes can do some magic when he's scrambling and finding his guys on scramble drills. Nobody does it better in the NFL. But I think the defense is going to win this one for the Lions. And I say that despite some of their concerns in the secondary. I believe in Amik Robertson. I believe probably more than most in Rocky Sin. And I'm in the ballpark of scores with you guys. Give me 26-23 Lions.
Ooh.
There you have it. I'll go shootout 34-31 Lions. Sorry, Will. Shout out to our friends Dog and Pony Show Brewing. If you're there, grab a beer. I mean, the graphic we have on the show here.